Welcome to the Florida Real Estate and Entrepreneur Podcast, where we interview the best and the brightest business and real estate leaders. Our mission is to inspire and help 1,000 entrepreneurs to start and succeed in real estate and entrepreneurship. We will give you the exact playbook to succeed in your business through the experience of those who blaze the path. We're bringing the what's working today directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Florida Real Estate and Entrepreneur Podcast. Today, my guest is Tina Smith, who is an investor in Florida and my Florida market. So I'm really excited to talk to her today. She just moved to Florida 9 months ago, which I'm really excited to hear what she's doing to take advantage of the awesome environment we have down here. She's began her real estate investing journey when she was 17 years old, which is really awesome. So she's been in the game for a while. She does have her real estate license in Florida, but that's not really her primary focus. She also owns a virtual assistant company, and she has a mission to help others, specifically women who want to grow their wealth through real estate investing, which I'm really, really excited to hear about that. So Tina, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you just catch us up to speed? You just got to Florida 9 months ago. You have this incredible story. Can you kind of tell us where it started and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So I was born and raised in the Midwest, specifically the Boot Hill of Missouri. I was the first in my family to get a college degree. The reason behind that is I watched my family struggle financially, and I knew that I wanted more for myself. And so at a very young age, at 15, I started working two jobs, waiting tables, fast food, worked at a tanning salon for a little while. Wasn't even the legal age to be working, to be honest with you, but I was working two jobs. My dad, I'm going to call him a jack of all trades, but my dad actually worked for John Deere, and he had an accident, and it kind of forced him to get into entrepreneurial endeavors. And so through my dad, I kind of watched him, you know, do different things to make money. And I'll never forget, he came to me and he said, you have some money saved, right? Because I'd been working those two jobs. And I said, yeah, I have some money saved. And he said, well, I want you to buy something with your money. And I said, what is it that you want me to buy? And he said, well, come with me. And we went to this barn in the middle of nowhere. And there was this car and it was covered. And he said, this is what I want you to buy. And I was like, what do I want to buy this for? You know, to me, it looked like a piece of junk car sitting in a barn. He goes, trust me, you need to take your money and buy this. So I took $3,500 of mine, my nest egg, my whole entire nest egg that I had saved. And I bought this car. If I remember correctly, it was like a 1970 Buick LeSabre convertible. It was a boat. But my dad was a mechanic and he knew how to paint. And so the vision was for us to fix it up and flip it. Well, before we got to that part of the journey, we actually had someone see it sitting in our yard and stopped in and said, hey, is that for sale? And it was, of course, because that's why we had bought it, to buy as an investment. And I actually ended up selling it and flipping it, making a profit. So then I had more money, and my dad said, now you need to take that money and you need to invest it in something else, and you need to just keep this ball rolling. And I'm like, but what am I going to buy now? Because I didn't have that much money. I think it was like $8,000 I had at that time. And he said, well, they're building a new subdivision a couple of miles from where we live. I'm going to take you over there and let's look and let's see what it costs to buy a lot in there. And so remember, I was raised in the Midwest, so it's rural Missouri, and it's not like a typical master plan community. There they develop subdivisions and you can go in as your own builder and you can build something. So I bought a lot at 17 years old. My boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, actually had to co-sign or help me with the loan because it was more than my savings was. And so I'll say we went in partners. We bought this lot. We held on to it for about a year, let the subdivision sell out, and I flipped that for another profit. So I took that money at that time. I don't remember exactly what it was, like $21,000, I think. And I went to St. Louis to go to college at 19. And I bought my first property using the funds that I had made from flipping the car, flipping the land, and then now I was buying my first piece of property. So I bought a townhouse at 19 years old. I lived in it, renovated it while I lived in it. I was going to college. I ended up listing that property after a couple years for sale with the developer's wife. And I remember her coming to do the listing appointment and her saying to me, "Well, this is the highest sale that the subdivision's ever had before." And I said, "Well, I want to list it for X, and I would appreciate it, you know, if you would just go along and humor me. And then if it doesn't sell for that price, I get it. We can reduce it, but we can't, you know, go backwards." So we ended up listing the property for a record sale price in that community. I'll never forget my husband now, but boyfriend at the time, we got on a plane to fly to Florida for a family reunion. And when we landed at Tampa International Airport at that time, I had multiple phone calls and it was my real estate agent. She said, "Tina, you're not going to believe this. Not only did we get your price, but we had a bidding war. So we've had two people offer over your asking price," which is a record setting price at this point. "And so I need you to tell me, you know, what you want to do." So we went over terms and we ended up sealing the deal. And at that point, I made my first five figures on a property. And you could say that I was hooked. I mean, I was at a very young age. I had made more money than I had ever made in probably a year, to be honest with you, at that point in my life. And so it just went on from there. I ended up buying the townhouse next door, doing the very same thing with that. Then I went on to buy some land and I decided to do a new build. It was really a big hurdle for me to overcome because it was going to be one of my biggest investments at that time. It was like a new build. It was $500,000. I didn't even know like how to go about getting a loan. How am I going to afford to get $500,000, you know, from the bank? But luckily, my husband was working a job in healthcare and we applied for the loan. We got it. We built this house thinking that this house was going to be, you know, our home. And I don't know if you call it luck, because at the time it was devastating, but we had an individual during the build process come and say, "You know, we want to buy this house." And I said, "Well, this house isn't for sale." And he said, "Well, I want to buy it." And I said, "Well, it's not for sale." I remember calling my dad devastated because I'm like, "My husband wants to sell this house. I don't want to sell it." So my dad's like, "Well, what's he offering you?" And when I told my dad's like, "Oh, you have to sell it. You have to sell the house." And so I ended up selling the house to this gentleman who was downsizing. And for me, I thought it was the biggest house ever. And I couldn't believe someone was buying a house to downsize into. But I made my first six-figure payday on that house. My first big investment, I made six figures. So that was in a subdivision where it was originally a nine-hole golf course, and they took out the golf course and made it into a subdivision. So what did I do? I took my six figures. I went two doors down from the house that I had just built, and I did the same thing again. Built another house, moved into it. I was in the house for about 5 months. I had a real estate agent come and knock at my door and say, "Look, I have a client. She wants to move into this area. I know you just built this house. There's nothing for sale in here. Would you be willing to sell?" And I said, "I don't know. It depends on what the terms are." So we ended up, you know, for probably a couple of months talking to this real estate agent, and we said, "No, we're not going to sell." And it's my first investing mistake that I ever made, not selling the house, because I did not want to pay the real estate agent. I think at the time the commission was like going to be $43,000 on this property. And I was like, "No, I'm not doing that. I'm going to sell it myself." Well, long story short, fast forward, the market was starting to turn and I was getting nervous. And so I ended up selling the house, but to someone completely different. And I paid a real estate agent anyway. So the moral of that story is pay a real estate agent, because usually your first offer, as you know, is your best offer. And so I had actually sold the property. I made $50,000 less, plus still paid a real estate agent.
What year was this when you were?
That was in 2007, 8 time period when the market was starting to take a nosedive. And honestly, I remember the agent saying when we sold that property, I remember her saying to me, "You're really lucky because, you know, the market's really changing." And I think it was somewhere about like a month later, the market just totally went to hell in a handbasket, right? So that was a big eye opener for me. So
Well, that's really good context, though, because a lot of investors we see today or we talk to today really started investing in 2011 after everything had settled and you could buy houses or lots for pennies on the dollar. And then they took the run up for 10 years. So you're taking the run up, the first run up that led to 2007. And you just have this impeccable luck and timing where you exit this second new build. You still made money, right?
Oh, yeah. Still made money. And so what was interesting is I decided at that point I was going to take a break from real estate investing. I felt like at that point I had dodged a bullet. It was time to take a break. And, you know, things happen. I call it sometimes the universe or whatever. But my husband had a friend that was visiting St. Louis, where we lived at the time after we had just gotten rid of that second big house that I refer to. And he said he wanted to meet us for dinner. And they had not seen each other in probably, I don't know, 15 years at that point. So we went, we met with them for dinner, and he's like, what are you guys up to? And my husband's like, well, I'm in healthcare, and, you know, Tina does real estate. She loves to invest. And, you know, we just sold this big house, blah, blah. And he said, well, I am looking to get into real estate investing. He had sold a company and made a lot of money. And he said, I don't know anything about investing in real estate, but I have the money and you guys, you know, kind of have a track record. And so let's do a partnership. So I did a partnership with a guy. He was 35 years old. He had sold his business for $35 million. He had a nuclear waste company, and that was his portion of the deal. They sold to a company from another country. And so even though the market was down, we looked at that as opportunity, right? So we had started buying some land together. We had bought some renos together to fix and flip. And then my biggest accomplishment to date was we had went to my husband's hometown and we were driving around and I noticed, I'm like, this is beautiful. It's a little small town. It's in Michigan. It's right on Lake Michigan. It's about 90 miles east of Chicago. And I said, you know, this is a beautiful town, but the real estate is really starting to age out. Like, I think this town needs some new homes built because people were renting out these houses on the water. And I mean, some of them were over 100 years old. I mean, they were at the end of their life. So there was a house that was for sale right on Lake Michigan. And I made a phone call to the guy and I said, listen, let's buy this house. And my vision is to tear it down. I'm going to work with an architect. We're going to design something amazing and we're going to change the coastline. And that's what I think that we should do. And he's like, all right, I'm on board. Let's do it. So we bought this house. We tore it down. The town went crazy. They thought, oh, we were, you know, tearing down a historical home and we were changing the coastline and it just wasn't a good idea, but we were determined to do it. So I worked with an architect, worked on a project for about 15 months. We built this monstrosity right on Lake Michigan. The house was 3 stories high. It had a lift in the garage for your cars. I mean, it was just an amazing property. The property that we built the house on was a perfect circle. So we had to figure out kind of how to put a square peg in a circle. So we got over all the obstacles, finished the house, and the market was still not recovered. It wasn't doing well. So we're like, well, what do we... This was in, I'm going to say 2012 time frame, I guess. Now, mind you, this was a $2 million house. So people just weren't buying $2 million houses at that time. So what we did is we pivoted. I think anybody that's looking to get into real estate investing, and you know this yourself, I think that you have to have multiple exit strategies, right? You have to be able to have a plan at what you intend to do with the property, but then you need to have a backup plan and then a backup plan to that, right? To be successful. Always. So what we did is we took the property off the market and we decided let's make it into an Airbnb or VRBO, whatever you want to call it. That property started out renting at about $3,500 a week. Then it started getting some traction. It went up to like $5,000 a week, went up to $7,500 a week, and ended up finalizing at about $12,500 a week for rental. So this thing was just making money. I mean, it was a cash cow, making money. Now taxes were a lot, but still it was paying for the turnover. It was paying for the taxes, all the upkeep on the property. So to get through that period, the property was held on to from, I'll say 7-8 years. And then we all know what happened in 2020, right? The pandemic, everybody thought the world was shutting down. But what happened? It was the best thing that ever happened to real estate, right? So these properties that we had been hanging on to, we decided to let's test the waters and put the property back on the market. And the property went on the market and it closed in December of 2021 for $2.2 million. We had bought the property for $600,000 with improvements. It was between $650,000, $700,000. So let's call it all in for $1.3. It was a cash cow during the time that it could not sell. And then it was inevitably the first property that yielded a seven-figure profit at the end of it on one single family residence.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exciting.
So yeah. You held that, obviously you were making money. You were getting paid monthly off of that net cash flow, even after taxes.
Sure.
So it was a great investment at that time. And then you sold it for, you know, basically a seven-figure profit.
Yes. And mind you, a partnership. So I don't want people to think that I made $1 million. That's not the case. But I did have a partner. But yes, that one property was the first seven-figure property.
And you were still living in Missouri at this time?
Yes. And what was interesting is I would oversee the project. I would do lots of phone calls. I was working a full-time job at that time. I would oversee the project by phone calls. I would make trips up there, you know, to check on the progress. I would meet with the interior designer, of course, to pick out all the selections. I was very hands-on, very involved. But yeah, that property was amazing piece of property.
So I'm also from Michigan, by the way. I'm a Midwesterner. Did you do any? So from that first kind of 2012 time frame where you obviously had some success, or up to 2012, and then you bought this property and held on to it. Did you do any other deals in that time, or was this your labor of love?
Nope. So we had some other deals. We had two pieces of land. We intended to do a new build in Memphis, Tennessee. We just held on to the land. It was a very interesting little community. There were only 11 lots in the subdivision. We took down two of those lots. And what we ended up doing with those was just holding them. Very little holding cost on a piece of land, right? Your taxes. We did carry insurance in case somebody, you know, walked across and broke their ankle and tried to sue us, but very little holding costs for that. So we held on to those pieces of land until the market revived itself, and we ended up selling those. And now there's homes actually built on those. We actually had two at the time. We had two properties that were supposed to be flipped properties, but because the market had changed, those became long-term rentals. And then, of course, when the market revived itself, did not renew, and those were just freshened up and they came on the market, and those were sold for a profit. And yeah, so basically the moral of the story is, you know, like I said earlier, I think you always have to just make sure that you have a backup plan, you know, because in real estate, you can have the best plan that you think, but we don't know if is there going to be another pandemic. Although that ended up turning out well for all of us who invest in real estate, it could have went the other direction. So I always just tell people that you need to look at a property, and when you look at it, is there multiple uses for that property? If you can't sell it, can you rent it? Can you short-term rent it? Can you mid-term rent it? Can you long-term rent it? What can you do with the property in order to not, you know, put yourself at risk at losing the property? So that's my recommendation to people, is make sure that you have different exit strategies if need be.
Multiple exit strategies is really powerful. It's a bit of a challenge in Florida, right? Because when you look at our Tampa, St. Pete market or the Miami market, I think Jacksonville to a lesser extent, you can find rentals. Most things today, if you buy them, even when you're buying them deep, you can't really refinance and leverage at 75% loan to value at the interest rates we have. And then cash flow, you really can't. And then short-term rentals are holding like 30 to 40% occupancy these days. So those aren't even looking better than a normal long-term rental. And you're starting to see other models come though. There's this whole pad split model. I don't know if you've seen this.
I do. I know about it.
they're turning these houses into 6, 7, 8 bedrooms and renting by the week, by the bedroom. But your client for that is not the creme de la creme when it comes to, you know, credit scores and all that kind of thing. So that's more of a C-class rental play, but could potentially cash flow. It's challenging in Florida to have multiple exit strategies. And I'm sure I'm really curious to hear, and we'll talk about what you think the most exciting opportunities are in Florida right now, particularly in our central Florida market. But you came to Florida 9 months ago and you're like, for some reason, probably the sunshine, and you've got family there, I suppose.
I do.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, this is cool. I can do real estate here. It's booming. It's still appreciating. There's 3,000 to 10,000 people a day moving down here. So there's always a need. What are you seeing in the Florida market? Where are you seeing the opportunity? What do you think are the best place for people right now?
Sure. In my opinion, I think new construction's where it's at. Let me just give you an example. I was on Davis Island, I think it was last week, with my husband, and we drove down this particular street on Davis Island. And I get people to ask me all the time, Tina, how do you invest in real estate? And I did a little reel and I haven't posted it yet, but I'm going to. And my reel was recording the street. And I said something to the effect of, when you see a little bitty house like this next to a great big old house like this, and then you see all these new construction houses sprinkled in between, that's where you need to go and invest in real estate. So for me personally, of course, I like the Dunedin market. I like Safety Harbor. I like Davis Island. I like new construction right now because I still think that there's meat on the bone. I still think that you can buy a house for $500,000 to $700,000. I think that you can knock it down. I think that you can rebuild. And I think there's an opportunity for you to still make a lot of money. So what I did is, after seeing what I saw, I went to the MLS and I just started looking at all the properties that were new construction. And what did they pay for the house that was there before? And the range was anywhere from, you know, 700 to a 1.3, I think was the most. And then I was looking to see, well, what do they have it listed for now? What's the square foot? Let me just back the numbers so that I can figure out, you know, what kind of margin I think they're going to make on these properties. And for me right now, because you are right, there are so many properties that don't cash flow. Like, I have a rental property in Nashville, and it's just a little soldier for me. It's self-contained. I cash flow about $7,200 a year. It totally pays for itself. And I bought it about a year and a half ago. I've got $90,000 in equity in it already. That's on a $300,000 investment for a condominium. So those opportunities you don't see so much here because the HOAs are extremely high.
Insurance.
Just the interest rates right now, right? It's so hard to just cash flow on a property. So I think the opportunity here in Central Florida is new construction. And for me particularly, I've had the opportunity to live all over the United States because my husband's a healthcare worker, and I've lived in lots of markets, and I've been able to be exposed to lots of different types of architecture. And what I particularly want to do myself is I want to bring a different style of home here. I call it a Tennessee modern. I moved here from Nashville. Nashville's got some beautiful, beautiful homes. And I don't think we're quite ready for Miami, but I think we're ready for a Tennessee modern. And what I plan to do with that is I'm going to build something. And if it doesn't sell when it's all said and done, I'll move into it. That's my exit strategy for that one. I'd be happy to move into it. But of course, my goal is I want to be able to build it and sell it and make a profit and do it again and again and again. But I think that that's a big opportunity here right now.
Yeah, I was just talking to another developer and builder on this podcast. His name's Ryan Whitefield. And Ryan's done a myriad of new builds here locally. He's actually from the UK, and he moved over here to Minneapolis in the Midwest, started there, and then came down to Florida. And One of the things he said to me was he's got a niche. He's buying houses between 600 and 900K where there are comps around it selling at like 1.92 million. And he'll either tear it down and build new, or he'll do a massive rehab job on it. And one of the things he's doing is he's popping the roof off and building vertically.
Sure.
And so long as you can get in with the county, the city, get permitting, and you understand that process, he can build at a dollar or at 120 a square foot, but he can sell at 400 a square foot for the extra space. So that exact margin you're talking about, he's able to create that. And I think the power of maybe you did this accidentally at first with the car and then with the lot is you found margin. It's business 101. Buy something low and sell it high because there's supply and demand. There's demand for the thing you want, and you've created margin in between. Really, really powerful. Super pumped about that. So your number one goal this year then is to, I suppose, find a house you can buy and build this beautiful new style you're going to bring from Nashville. Is that where you're at?
Yes, that's my goal. That's my goal. I'm leaving in the next week. I intend to take a trip up to Nashville. I want to visit with some builders there and meet with a few architects. And then from there, I want to come back and I want to really zone in on, you know, I mentioned to you the three areas that I think are great, but I'm sure there's many more. St. Pete's another one. I forgot to mention St. Pete. I think there's opportunity in St. Pete as well. I always tell people, I had lunch with a guy the other day. He's actually a colleague in real estate. And he's like, you know, how do you know? And I said, well, some of it is research and some of it's luck. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. I said, but here's some of the things that I think you, being a new investor, should look for. And I said, it's not rocket science. I said, look to see where they're moving dirt. And where they're moving dirt is people that have way bigger pockets than I do or that he does. They've done the research, right? They've done the studies. They know the traffic. They know the population, the demographics. They know all of that. So just go where those people are going, right? Like where are your Publix going in? Where are your Trader Joe's going in? Where are your Whole Foods going in? It's so easy. I mean, let's talk about just real estate investing on a very basic level. If you buy a piece of property in an area where they're moving dirt now, just natural inflation, 3-5%, right? If you can figure out a way to cover your cost on that property and just hold it, there you go. That's the most basic way to invest in real estate, right? Have someone else to pay for a piece of property that you own.
Here's an interesting thing for you too, Tina, because I'm a military guy. I'm retiring this year. I bought a house in Pasco County in Lando Lakes.
Yeah.
And for the first time in our lives, I've been married to my wife for almost 19 years this year. So we've moved maybe 20 times, you know, in the military. And we're really excited. My wife's like, this is going to be our forever home. But me, I'm looking all along the 54 and the 56, and I'm in the Pasco County Development Facebook page watching all those plans get approved to erect 300-unit planned urban development, planned master neighborhoods. They're bringing all kinds of stores, and all the stuff you're talking about is coming all along the entire 54, all of it. All that land you see right now, if you drive north and go east-west on the 54 or the 56, it's all spoken for. So I bought this house for like, you know, $750K. And I'm thinking to myself, well, as soon as it hits 1.5, we're selling this thing.
Sure.
And we know, and I know the values are not going to go down because they're building all of this stuff up there. So I'm with you on that. And I totally agree. I also have a really good friend. His name is James. He's an active duty Navy SEAL. He's in Tampa. He runs a meetup called the Elite Investor Meetup. Uh-huh. And when he got down to Tampa from probably Virginia Beach or somewhere, he bought a few rentals. He was doing the real estate thing. And then he moved into a brand new build house. He's a single guy. So he rents out the other room, does the old house hack.
Sure.
Pays for his mortgage. And he says, man, I can build this myself. So he starts to build on infill lots in Tampa proper, uh-huh. like Riverside Heights and really sought after areas. And he gets these houses for, say, you know, $200,000-$400,000, builds a beautiful 3,000 to 4,000 square foot house for maybe $650K, $700K, something like that. But now he's exiting these houses at 1.5, right?
Nice.
1.4 and creating $250,000 in profit on each one of these. But to your point, he's done this like maybe 8, 9, 10 times. He may even be over that now. But each time he's cashing out a couple $100,000 from this. Mm-hmm. And he's just so in tune with those areas you're talking about, like the Riverside Heights or, you know, down by Armature Works, if you've been down there.
Sure. Yes.
And he's just brilliant. He's the same as you, where he goes, I can just build a brand new house. The crazy part is you'll do really well because you're going to go bring a new style. But for him, he can just go to a regular builder and say, show me the different plans you have and what can I sell that plan for on this lot. and do the backwards math. Oh, if I buy this lot for $200K, cost me $600,000-$700,000 to build it, withholding cost, I'm all in for 1.1 and I can sell 1.5, I've created massive margin for myself. So I agree with you. I think new builds, here's another fascinating thing. So us and I have a number of companies, we do commercial, but we also wholesale a lot of properties in Florida, in the Panhandle and Central Florida. In 2021 and 2022, the hedge funds, the institutions came into Florida like crazy and bought thousands of properties. They were paying crazy prices for these properties and the wholesalers were wholesaling them these houses off market. Well, mid-22, the hedge funds all stopped. The music just stopped. So they quit buying these wholesale houses. And remember, these guys have billions of dollars that they have no other choice but to employ the capital. They can't take the capital and sit on it. So they took the capital and they went to new build neighborhoods in a build to rent model. So they're building entire, like there are some neighborhoods that are master plan neighborhoods, massive 200, 300, 400, 500 houses. And large portions of these are build to rent. So you've got like Blackstone and these companies building these beautiful houses and renting them out. The new build, a lot of people have already pivoted to the new build space. And if you look right now with tightened rates, if you walked into a builder's office today, most people are paying 6 to 8% on their rates for their property. If you walked into a builder's office today, they've got in-house lending offering 4 to 6%. It's really hard to compete with that. Now people have, now you have all these flippers, right? And they're bringing old inventory, making it look good, but their buyers are looking at something new that they can actually afford more of because they can get loans at 4 to 6%, or this house that you flipped, which you made look pretty good and it's nice, but it's not brand new. And it's actually going to cost me more to get into that property. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting headwinds in the market. We'll probably see some rate drops this year. The inventory is not going to increase. The builders have not built enough. There's not enough inventory coming online, not this year, not next year, probably not in the foreseeable future. So real estate's still a great vehicle.
I agree with you 1000%. And you know, the thing I love about real estate is I have a mentor and he always says, because you know, people say, well, I don't have money to invest in real estate, I don't know how to get started. Here's what the mentor says. He says, you don't need money if you have the deal, right? And that's what I want people to understand, is there's so many ways to get started investing in real estate. You don't have to start with $1 million or $2 million property. You can start with land. I mean, I know a lot of people that flip land and they do well at flipping land, and they're not flipping land in their backyard either. They're using tech and they're figuring out ways to flip land in other states from their computer. There's wholesaling. You know, find a deal, partner with somebody. You don't need money if you partner with somebody. And that's what I really want people to understand, is that if you have the will to do it, there's a way. And the reason I really said in my bio about women is because I find it interesting statistically that 62% of realtors are women, but yet 68% of real estate investors are men. And so I'm like, wait, there's something wrong here. Like, you're the agent, you have access, right, to the information first, and you're serving a lot of men as an investor, when I think that women should be able to learn how to look at those opportunities, right? Instead of just calling a man and saying, hey, I have a deal, how about figuring out how to learn how to look at a deal yourself, right? And maybe it's your first avenue. I think about people that get calls all the time from family members that live out of state, and someone's passed away and they just want to get rid of the house, right? They don't want to mess with it. Well, you may be the real estate agent that they call. And if you are, then maybe you should know how to look at that deal and evaluate it, or call somebody that knows how to look at it and evaluate it and see if that's a deal that you can buy, right? So yeah,
why is that? Is it just, you know, I hadn't thought about it from a male, female, woman, man perspective, but I have thought about it very deeply, looking at the agent ecosystem and the investor ecosystem. And we have this seven-figure agent thing that we built it because there's all these agents out here who have in-depth market knowledge. And to your point, 68% of them are, or, you know, whatever large percentage of them are women.
Sure.
And they're coming across these deals, and just as an agent in general, it's like, why are you not building wealth? You are on the sales hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. And what is it that's preventing you from buying these deals? And here's what I discovered. And this was agnostic of the sex. But sure. What I discovered when we, in our investor space, we are super abundant. We do not operate with the scarcity. If you called me tomorrow and said, hey man, are you guys looking at any lots? Could you have your acquisitions team look for lots in these areas for me? We would collaborate, try to find deals and do deals together. We wouldn't even think twice about it. But when you go into the agent space and you watch them ask each other questions, they are operate from a complete scarcity. And I cannot wrap my head around it. And I think it's the biggest obstacle to agents, and maybe even some of the female agents, from them building meaningful wealth for them and their families, because they believe that it's finite. And the reality is it's not finite. There are a lot of agents, but to be honest, most of them aren't doing transactions. So I don't know why they're worried about some of these. You know, there's a low barrier to entry. Agents are coming in all the time. If you just focus on being a good person, collaborating, being an expert at your craft, you don't have to worry about that. But I have thought about that deeply. Not so much the sex. I feel like the agents operate from such scarcity. They don't want to tell you anything. They don't want to collaborate with each other most of the time. They've got to open up their minds, in my opinion. The investor community is great. The amount of collaboration I see in the investor community is bar none. It is just top notch. So I'm curious if you've seen that with some of the agents, or if you've seen that with the investor community, those same observations.
Yeah, I'll tell you what brought it to my attention and why I researched the statistics, because I pay thousands of dollars, five figures every year, multiple, to be in masterminds. I love to learn. I want to fast track to get to where I want to go. It's not the how, it's the who, right? I want to, if I'm able to pay the money to get to some place where I want to go 10 times faster, the return on investment's exponential, right?
Infinite. It's infinite.
Right, right. And what I find is that even the majority of the masterminds that I am a part of, it is a male that is the person that I'm looking to for the information. And I'm in a lot of rooms where there's not many of me, right? And I think sometimes, well, maybe I'm just in the wrong rooms. So I started, you know, Googling, like, how many agents are women? How many people are investors? And it's factual data that women just don't do it. I do find in the real estate industry that it's not collaboration, it's competition. And I think that's very small-minded because, as you said, 50% of agents don't even ever do a deal, you know? So, because the barrier to entry is so low, which I think that needs to be changed, but I think that everybody is competing and they would get so much further if they collaborated. And I hate to say this, but I think women specifically, for some reason, have a more difficult time collaborating. They look at another woman as competition, where I don't think that is as much in men groups. At least I don't see it. So I do wish that there were more women that would open their minds to, let me collaborate with this chick that knows this, that, or the other. And then, you know, she can get me to where I want to go. And then in turn, I can maybe help the next person get to where they want to go. Because I do think that that's real. I think a lot of people say that they want to collaborate, but at the end of the day, they don't. They view you as competition. And I think that it's really sad, to be honest, because I think that there's room for everybody to eat. And I just think that a lot more people could get a lot further if they would be more willing to collaborate instead of say they want to collaborate, to actually do it. I mean, I love to be around somebody that's better than me, whether it's, you know, a better investor, a better person, better skill set, whatever it is that I'm looking to do. That makes me better at the end of the day, right? Like, I don't look at somebody else and I don't have jealousy and envy. I'm like, tell me more. How do I get to where you're at? How do I do what you're doing? And I feel that to the core of my soul. I don't care if you're a male or a female. Like, I try to tell everybody around me in my group, listen, I don't have the answer to everything, but what I do know, I'll be more than happy to share. And what I don't know, I can guarantee you, I know someone that knows.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Come to me. Let's do this. Let's everybody, you know, get better at whatever it is, whether that's being an agent or becoming an investor or whatever. I think the problem is people just don't know how to get started. And I'll just put it out there. You know, if there's anybody that wants to get started and they think that I can be of assistance to them, hit me up. I'd love to do that. I'd love to help other people do what I do.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, what's crazy is I had Ryan on. Ryan is, I'm in Seven Figure Flipping Mastermind. I've been in multiple others. I too will buy speed, right? Speed and
sure.
The network that you need. You and I are not in the same mastermind though. We just kind of got connected on social media. And
correct.
I think people would be like, oh, like Tina and Adam, they must do deals together. We just got connected on social media. We're willing to get on a call and have a conversation with each other and share it with whoever else is in our market
right.
and wants to know about it. So I think that's really cool. Yeah, masterminds are powerful. All the episodes I've been recording recently, almost everybody is in some type of group that they pay to be a part of. And I think about this a lot because, you know, joining my first mastermind, it was like, man, I'm going to spend, you know, 15, 25 grand to be in a group. That's crazy. That's like, what is this? Like a scam? And I joined that mastermind, but then I go look at other professions. There are, if you go look at people who manage money, or if you start to look at people who are sitting on meaningful money, they're paying 25 grand a year plus $900 a month to be in the country club. And I know that because I raised money for commercial multifamily deals.
Sure.
And that's where the money sits. And we're over here worried about paying to be in a group of people who are doing what you want to do at a scale that you can't even imagine at this point in time. So no, it's really cool. I'm happy to hear that, you know, you're also in these communities. You're obviously very passionate about the women in real estate. Are you doing anything right now? Are you starting a meetup in Florida where some of these ladies can come and maybe learn from you or anything like that?
Well, that's interesting that you say that, or ask that, I should say, because, you know, how you and I got connected. We have a common friend, and that friend and I were just having a conversation about that's something that we need to do. You know, we need to create that environment. And so I'm hoping that real soon, like in the next month, that I can create an opportunity like that. And listen, it won't be just for women. I want it to be for everybody. I don't want to exclude anybody because I have four brothers, and my brothers, you know, I love dearly. So I don't want to leave anybody out. But she and I have been in talks about starting something. So I'm hoping in the next month that we're able to accomplish that, because, you know, I've done a few things that she has not done. And then she's done some stuff in the real estate space that I have not. And so I think that it's going to be a true collaboration over competition. Maybe that's what we should name it or call it. I don't know. But I'm hoping that real soon that we can start something like that.
Was it Vanessa that connected us?
It was.
Okay. Yeah. Also, she's also from Michigan.
I know.
It was very close.
All the Michigan people.
Yeah, some Midwesterners are taking over. Well, that's really cool.
That's right.
As you guys get that going, let me know. I'll be happy to support that any way I can.
Thank you.
I want to go back. So your story starts, you know, before the 2008 bubble and crash, but you've done so much over that time. If you could even go back just 3 years ago, which we'd put ourselves in 2021. So we're kind of coming out of COVID a little bit at that point. You know, what advice would you give yourself at that time? 3 years ago from today, what would it be?
Sure. I would say start now. Do not wait. For me specifically, social media. I don't have a huge presence on social media. I like to make money. I don't get on social media really and talk about what I do. And I probably need to get better at doing that, because maybe I could encourage other people to do it, meaning start investing as a female investor. So start now, don't wait. So I should have done that 3 years ago. I should have started on social media and started telling my story. So I'm telling myself today, I'm going to hold myself accountable and put it out there and say I'm going to do a better job at that. And then I also believe in delegating in order to dominate. That kind of leads to, you know, my VA business. I think that you can leverage people to do the things that either you don't want to do or you don't know how to do. And so for me personally, my list just kept getting longer and longer and longer. And that's actually what caused me to create a VA company. I had to have VAs in my own life for personal and business reasons to help me get done things that I needed to do. So now I help other people do that as well. So delegate to dominate, that's a huge one. And then lastly, I kind of touched on this earlier, but if you don't know something, ask. Don't be afraid to ask. Ask someone who knows. And so for anybody out there, if there's something that you feel like that I know that would be helpful to you, I'm an open book. I don't know everything by all means. I've never wholesaled a deal in my entire life. That's not my wheelhouse, but I know a lot of people that have done wholesaling. So I'll be honest and transparent. If I don't know something, I'll be the first to tell you that I don't know, but I will be more than happy to find someone that does and make that connection. Or if there's anything that I can do to help somebody, I'd be more than happy to do so.
Yeah, Tina, that's awesome. Okay, well, if people want to learn more about you, since you're going to start your social media stuff now.
Yeah.
Or your business or what you're doing, or maybe they want to collaborate with you and help you find lots or houses to buy. How can they find out more about you? Where can they find you at?
Sure. So my Instagram is called Relocate with Tina, and it's Tina in Tampa. So you'll know that that's me. As far as if somebody's looking for a VA, my company's called Outsource Virtual Staffing. It's literally outsourcevirtualstaffing.com. You can visit the website. There's a contact me button there. Contacts come directly to me. So I'll be the one to see that. I'm on Facebook, Tina Smith, Tampa. Like I said, I don't have a huge presence on social media, but I'm putting it out there and I will start sharing more.
Everybody go follow Tina.
Yes, please come follow me. I promise I'll share some information and it'll be worth it. And then if you have any questions, you can always shoot me a DM.
Awesome. Tina, thanks. I'm super glad that Vanessa connected us and we got to have this conversation. I'm sure it won't be our last. And
I hope not.
I'm super grateful that you took the time out of your day to do this with me today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adam. I appreciate you. Thank you.